Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in to the Frequency of the Past, where great stories are waiting to be heard again. If you're enjoying this podcast, please let me know. Reach out the usual ways. All those links can be found in the description. And once you're done having fun with all that, please consider following, reviewing, and rating the podcast. And with all that, please enjoy the show.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. We invite you to take your seat as Matthew Slade, Private Investigator, unfolds part one of a three-part story, Day of the Phoenix.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. It was 2:40 a.m. I was at my apartment, the Warwick Arms, completing some paperwork on an extortion case. Hello? Yes, this is Matthew Slade. Oh, yes, Mrs. Marlowe. What? Of course, I'll come right over. It was Laura Marlowe, wife of a client, ex-client. He just stopped, two bullets cold. I grabbed my coat and headed for the underground garage. It was a bad night, a worse one for a murder. I headed for the Marlowe home, 23 El Cerrito Place. Richard Marlowe had been more than a client. He'd been a close friend, a man of integrity. I couldn't imagine anyone wanting him dead. It was a shock. I got another one as I arrived. A body lay crumpled in the driveway. It was hard to recognize him. A bullet fired from close range had torn away his face. I carried him into the gatehouse, returned to the car, then continued up the drive to the house. One night, two murders. I hoped I wouldn't find a third. As I reached the house, I could see Laura Marlowe silhouetted in the doorway.
Mr. Slade.
Mrs. Marlowe, are you all right?
Yes. Thank heaven you're here.
And I came as quickly as I could.
Please come in. He's over there, by the desk.
You feel up to telling me about it?
I was upstairs. I'd just gone to bed when I heard the shot. As I came down the stairs, I heard a car drive away. I came in here and I found him.
Have you called the police?
You're the only one I've called. Because you're a good friend of my husband, I felt I could count on you for help. I was frantic, don't you see? I had no one else to turn to.
Now, what about the servants?
Oh, this is the housekeeper's night off. I kept ringing for Morris, our chauffeur, but he didn't answer.
I found him lying by the front gate, dead. The best way I can help you, Mrs. Marlowe, is by calling the police. I called homicide. Within 30 minutes, the place was like a three-ring circus.
Hey, take another one from over here, Mr.
Okay.
Let's get this area talking, wrap it up, huh?
You tell a pretty convincing story, Slade. That all there is to it?
No more than I've already told you.
That's true, Lieutenant Slade. Mr. Slade did me a great service by coming here tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. You touch anything, Mrs. Marlowe?
No.
No trace of a gun. You wouldn't be carrying one, would you, Slade?
Not today.
Keep one?
My office.
License?
Naturally.
What sort of gun is it?
38.
That's all for the moment, Slade. You're free to go.
I left, but not alone. As I passed through the gateway and out into the street, A black sedan pulled from the curb and followed. Lieutenant Flagg obviously intended to keep a close watch on my activities. As I entered into the Warwick Arms garage, the black sedan cruised by. From my apartment window, I could see it parked across the street. Some poor cop was going to spend a very uncomfortable night. I turned in, slept for what seemed like minutes, when the doorbell rang.
Okay, I'm coming. I knew it. Who else would come calling at this hour but the police? Don't you gentlemen ever sleep?
You're going to let us in?
No, I don't know. Did I break some law by sleeping till 7 o'clock?
Look, Slade, don't get funny.
All right, calm yourself, Lieutenant. Come on in. Now, take a seat. What brings you so early?
Tough luck you've been at the Marlowe place before us. Makes you suspect.
Oh, come on now. You can hardly expect me to believe you think that.
You got to start with someone. You look good to us. Check you out. Sergeant Tonelli here wrote it all down in this little notebook. Been around, Slade. Born Sydney, 1932. Moved to New Guinea in 49. Joined the Colonial Office, 51. 57, Special Customs Agent, Marseille. Very impressive.
Oh, you haven't heard the half of it, Lieutenant. I have a scar on my left thumb, and when it rains, my leg hurts. So that's from the time a dog took a bite out of it. Now, look, let's dispense with this tour and get this over with.
You told us the Marlowe dame called and asked you to go over there.
Yeah, that's right. Richard Marlowe was a client of mine. His wife needed help. I gave it. Anything wrong with that?
Not if that's all there is to it. What was the nature of your business with him?
He collected things. That was his hobby. I tracked down several art pieces for him. In fact, we just recently returned from a buying trip to the Orient.
Mrs. Marlowe?
My dealings were mainly with her husband. I've only met her a few times.
Is that so?
Now, look, I don't care much for your insinuation, Lieutenant.
You were at the scene of a murder last night, and your reason for being there don't satisfy me. Could be you and his wife were playing around. Makes a good motive. There were no signs an intruder had broken into that house. She reported nothing stolen. What clues we have lead me to believe Marlowe is expecting whoever knocked them off. Expecting a friend, maybe. You know a lot more than you're letting on, and I intend to find out what it is. Get dressed.
Oh, you're not serious.
You better do as he says, Matt.
All right. If you want to talk, let's talk.
We'll talk. Not here. I prefer to play the game in my own backyard. You got 5 minutes.
The lieutenant was a man used to getting his own way. I dressed and left with him. As we reached the street and entered the police car, I noticed the black sedan still parked.
In the front, Slade, between us.
You could have sent your watchdog home last night. I wasn't going anywhere.
What?
That watchdog you had tailing me.
We had no one tailing you. You've been seeing things.
I guessed wrong. And who was in that car, and what did he want? We arrived at headquarters in 15 minutes. An hour later, Lieutenant Flagg was still playing Quizmaster.
What were you doing at the Marlowe place?
You're a hard man to convince, Lieutenant. You've heard my story.
Couldn't fool an old lady. Now quit stalling and lay it on the line.
Would you like a statement?
A full statement, signed and sealed.
Without coercion?
We don't get them any other way.
Well, then I'll need my attorney.
You intend to stand on your right, stage a big scene?
If you think I killed Marlowe, book me. If you do, that gives me the right to bring my attorney down here. Now, I know as well as you do there isn't a charge in the book you can hold me on.
I didn't say I was going to book you. But if I do, I can arraign you on what I've already got.
What charge?
As a suspect. Suspicion of accessory after the fact, a felony, section 32, in case you're interested.
As an accessory after the fact, you'd have to prove intent. And in this case, knowledge that a crime was committed. Now, just how do you intend to prove that?
Ways can be found. I could rig a dozen things. I could have you locked up as a material witness, for one thing.
Not in this state, except by a court order. You wouldn't dare try that.
I've got the lab report here. How's it going?
Still covering the same ground. Both parties shot from close range of the .45. Marlowe twice through the pump, Morris once in the face. Okay, Slade, you can go.
What? You mean you're giving up that easily?
I said you could go. I didn't say it was finished. You're not off the hook yet, not by a long shot. I'll give you a day or so to think things over. If you're not back here with the kind of story I think you're capable of telling, I'll be forced to go to the commissioner and tell him we have a suspect withholding information in a murder case. Is that clear?
Very clear.
Adios, gentlemen.
You don't really think he had anything to do with it, do you? No. My guess is he has an idea who did. We got to come up with a motive. Maybe Slade can supply us with one.
You sure ride him?
Yeah. I intend to keep on riding him until I sort this thing out. We are going to see him sweat.
I felt like a man sinking in quicksand. Like it or not, I was now involved in a murder case. I took a cab to my office across town on Sutter Street. As I got out, the black sedan pulled ahead and parked. I made a mental note of the license number, entered the building, and took the elevator to my fourth floor office. Be a sweetheart and check on who owns a black sedan, license number OKW576, and I'm going into shave.
Not so fast. You have a visitor.
A client?
Laura Marlowe.
Mrs. Marlowe. Hold my call, Jonesy. How are you feeling, Mrs. Marlowe?
Better, thank you.
Please, sit down.
Thank you. I really don't know how to tell you this. There's more to last night's killing than you might imagine. Much more.
Yes?
The jade statuette you located for my husband when you were both in Hong Kong, it was stolen last night.
The Phoenix? I can't imagine anyone killing two people for an inexpensive art piece.
To the contrary. It has extreme value.
Well, that's hardly possible, Mrs. Marlowe. The statuette is merely a replica of a legendary bird, worth at the most $200. There must be 50 of them around.
Mr. Slade, shortly after you returned from the Orient, Richard discovered the statuette to be the original Tibetan jade phoenix.
To my knowledge, it's never been substantiated that an original Tibetan phoenix actually exists. Oh, why didn't you tell me this last night?
I needed time to think.
And?
I decided to ask you for your help, to investigate for me.
The disappearance of the jade or your husband's murder?
The jade. It may seem a mercenary request at this time, but a necessary one. For some time, I've been wanting a divorce, but Richard always refused. And then last week, his attorney came to the house with a settlement waiver. He said a divorce would be agreed to if I signed it. Foolishly, I suppose, I did. You see, I'm in need of money, Mr. Slade. If I have the jade, I can sell it. I'm willing to pay you well for its recovery.
Who else knows what you've just told me?
Well, I was coming to that. About a month ago, an antique dealer came to the house to show some art pieces.
Do you know his name?
Edward De Silva.
I've heard of him. He's involved in more than antiques.
Well, somehow he found out about the Phoenix and wanted to buy it. Richard told him it wasn't for sale. De Silva was determined. He kept pestering him to sell. They had a violent argument over it, and then there were threats.
What kind of threats?
Blackmail. De Silva said he knew of a stock manipulation that Richard was involved in some years ago.
Anything to it?
Oh, not that I know of.
Excuse me a moment. Jonesy, see if you can get me both the business and residence address of Edward De Silva. He's an antique dealer.
Will you help me, Mr. Slade?
Let me give it some thought. I'll call you at home later in the day.
Oh, I don't know that I can go back there. Not after what's happened.
Well, if it would be of help, I could have my secretary assist you in moving into an apartment.
Thank you.
I'll have Miss Jones make the arrangements. Excuse me.
What do you have for me, Jonesy?
Let's see. The car is registered to Pacific Rent-A-Car. Dallas Hawks leased it yesterday. Gave his address as the Lux Hotel. That took some getting.
That's my girl.
Your Edward De Silva lives at 17 Ronda Vista Lane. His antique shop's at 2500 St. Cloud, but you won't find him there this afternoon. He's at the Beverly Athletic Club.
Well, here's another job for you. I'd like you to arrange for Mrs. Marlowe to move into an apartment, help her get some things together, and then see if she gets settled.
Mm-hmm.
I'd suggest the Fremont Terrace.
All right.
Now, Mrs. Marlowe, Miss Jones will take care of everything.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Slade.
Not at all. I'll be in touch. I went to the window of my inner office and looked down at the street. The black sedan was still parked. I made up my mind to go down and face the driver when...
Mr. Slade, forgive me if I startled you. My card.
He handed me a lavender calling card, which read, Aram Ballestero, Curator, Damascus Museum, Damascus, Syria. He was a peculiar-looking bird, tall, dark, with a goatee. He wore what looked like a morning coat with a carnation in the lapel. A pearl-gray Homburg hat set at a rakish angle on his head. He wore white gloves and carried a black ivory cane. My nostrils caught the odor of what seemed like shalimar. I offered him a chair.
I'm seeking a statuette, a certain jade figure in the form of a mythical bird.
A Tibetan phoenix?
Precisely. It was stolen following the death of its owner 2 years ago in Damascus. He had willed it to the museum.
Recently, we learned the Phoenix had turned up in the Orient. A Shanghai merchant had used it as a form of payment to a gentleman in Hong Kong for a passage across the Red Border. A man by the name of...
Lyle Milford Jackman?
Yes. I searched out Mr. Jackman, prepared to pay, on behalf of the museum, a reasonable sum for the return of the Phoenix. Evidently, Mr. Jackman suspected it might be worth more than was being offered. Told me he had sold it to a dealer in London. I spent 2 weeks there. False lead. I returned to Hong Kong, but Mr. Jackman had gone.
What led you here?
I learned that he had left for San Francisco on a Japanese freighter. Also that some months earlier, you had purchased the Phoenix from him for an American collector.
Then you feel this is the original Jade Phoenix described in Tibetan legend?
That's correct, Mr. Slade.
What makes you so sure?
The museum has conducted extensive research into its history. Perhaps you'd be interested in its findings.
Very interested.
In 600 A.D., as legend tells it, a caravan of Buddhist priests traveled from Karakoram, traversing the Himalayas into Tibet. King Namri Songsen had offered them a fertile valley in which to build a temple. To show their gratitude, they brought the king gifts of great wealth, among them an exquisite jade statuette, carved into the shape of the phoenix, the king of birds. Oriental rubies were set into the eyes. The jade was stolen by a Nepal warlord and taken into India. Little was heard of it until 1295, when Marco Polo brought it into Venice. News of the jade appeared in Spain in 1542 and again in 1868 in Corsica, but was never positively identified.
What happened to it after Corsica?
Well, there were no reports of the phoenix from 1868 until 2 years ago in Damascus. Unfortunately, it was mislaid before the museum could authenticate it.
You say rubies were encrusted in the eyes?
Yes. They were said to have been covered with a thick green coating, done, obviously, to conceal their immense value. As I mentioned, it is our belief the one I am now searching for is the original. Hence my visit here, to negotiate a purchase with your client.
I wish that were possible. My client was murdered last night.
Huh?
The Phoenix stolen.
Oh, this is very distressing news indeed. Could I persuade you to assist me in its recovery? The museum has authorized me to offer $10,000 to that end.
Let me think about it. Where can I contact you?
I'm lodged at the San Moritz Hotel. I'll be looking forward to our next meeting. I feel assured in trusting you with the job at hand.
He left as silently as he had come. He seemed to glide through the door. To say I was slightly intrigued would be putting it mildly. This case was taking on strange proportions. Four people seeking a jade statuette. Laura Marlowe, Edward De Silva, Aaron Ballestero, and now Lyle Jackman on his way here from Hong Kong. Or had he already arrived? I thought of Dallas Hawks in the black sedan. Had Jackman sent him? Or was he to be number five? I looked out the window. I could see him clearly now as he leaned against the fender. He was dark, slight of build, looked Indian. He was dressed like a carnival barker in his white suit, black shirt, and straw hat. It was time to force his hand. I left the office and headed for the street. I made sure he saw me as I crossed the intersection of Powell and Sutter. I actually had to stop several times and window shop to keep him from losing me. Fine shadow. I turned down Bush Street and into an alley. I pressed myself into a small alcove and waited. Hawk stopped at the mouth of the alley, then cautiously started down. As he approached my position, I stepped out and confronted him. He moved for his gun. I grabbed his arm and pushed him back against the wall. I brought my knee up into his stomach. He doubled up long enough for me to disarm him. He sagged limply against the wall. The fight was gone out of him. Now, as a shadow, you're about as inconspicuous as a carnival barker. Now, what do you want?
The guy gave me 50 to tell you. That's all I know.
What guy?
I don't know. Just a guy.
If this guy's name happens to be Lyle Jackman, you go back and tell him I don't like being followed by the likes of you. And if he wants to see me, my office hours are 9 to 5. Now go back and tell him that, mister.
My next move was to call on Edward De Silva at the Beverly Athletic Club. It was a fashionable health spa on the West End for overweight and overwealthy businessmen.
The attendant led me to an outside garden patio. He pointed to a bronzed figure poised on the high board of the swimming pool. I watched him execute a pretty fair jackknife. cut into the water like a missile and came up at mid-pool, shaking the water from his head. De Silva?
Well, who wants him, Frank?
I do. He paid little attention to me, went right on swimming. I thought I'd try something a little stronger. A mutual friend was murdered last night, Eddie. The one you were blackmailing. Well, that reached home. He swallowed a mouthful of water, swam to the steps, and quickly got out. He donned a fancy beach robe.
A man could see a lot of trouble with that kind of talk. Who are you?
I handed him my card. He tugged at the crisp linen handkerchief protruding from the initial breast pocket of the robe, then ran a finger over his hairline mustache.
Matthew Saint Investigator, huh? That's cute. You know, I think I've heard your name someplace. Why don't you join me for lunch? We can find out what's on your mind.
A few minutes later, we were munching on a concoction of carrots, celery, lettuce, and seaweed. He seemed to enjoy it. I felt like Peter Cottontail. They feed this to rabbits, don't they, Eddie?
Well, that's a good way to stay young, Frank.
Now, you might have something there, come to think of it. I've never seen an old rabbit.
You got a funny sense of humor, Frank.
Yeah, about some things, Eddie, but not about your connection with Richard Marlowe.
What connection might that be?
A certain art piece you wanted, a jade phoenix.
Oh, yeah, well, it's no secret. I wanted the phoenix. I offered him a good price, and we were close to a deal, and all this happened.
Well, that's not quite the way I heard it.
You listened to the wrong people, Frank.
You wanted the phoenix. You threatened Marlowe with blackmail. You go that far, maybe you'd even murder for it.
What's that supposed to mean?
That's exactly what I said. Two people were killed for the phoenix last night, Eddie.
You can't pin that on me.
No, I could make a good try.
Well, now, why would I want to go to that much trouble for an old piece of jade?
Because that old piece of jade is worth money.
That's not enough for me to kill somebody.
Mrs. Marlowe thinks you did.
If she said that, she's a dirty liar. Now, look, she wanted me to force the old boy into giving her a divorce. So she told me of a crooked stock deal he pulled once, wanted me to hold it over him. See, even though he hated her guts, he wouldn't let her go. Well, he got some kind of kick holding out on it. He cut her off without any spending money. Now, like I said, she wanted me to blackmail him so she could get a divorce and then a settlement. The deal was we'd split whatever she got. I wanted no part of it.
Where were you last night?
I was at home. I was in all night.
Well, you don't sound too sure.
Where do you get off asking me all these questions?
When the police find out the phoenix is the murder motive, you're going to have to do a lot of explaining.
Maybe, but not to you.
Eddie was visibly shaken. I'd done a good job of unnerving him. I thought it curious that he didn't seem at all surprised to hear the phoenix had been stolen. As of now, only four people knew that. Laura, Ballestero, myself, and the killer. I put De Silva in a bad light. I decided this would be as good a time as any to give his home a quick going over. 17 Ronda Vista Lane, a Spanish-style home set well back from the road. I rapped on the door to make sure no one was there, then went around back and slipped the catch on the patio door. Inside, the place looked like a museum. An oversized antique desk was set into one corner of the room. I searched it, came across a leather-bound book. There were dozens of names, girls' names, and other pertinent information. This was not just a bachelor's little black book. De Silva was operating a call girl racket. Every car pulled into the driveway. I hurriedly returned the book, looked out from behind the drapes. It was De Silva, and he was heading for the front door, and fast. I looked for a place to hide, darted behind the Soji folding screen as he came in. He moved straight to the desk. I could see partially through the crack in the screen. He lifted the desk blotter, removed a small envelope, checked its contents, then slipped the envelope into his coat pocket. He started for the door, but stopped short as the phone rang. He hesitated for a moment, and then left. The phone continued to ring. I moved to the window and watched as the silver drove off and then picked up the receiver.
Eddie? Hello? Hello, Eddie?
There was no mistaking that voice. Laura Marlowe. Why was she phoning Eddie? Suddenly, I felt a sharp sting on the back of my neck. Fuzziness, smoke swirls, and then black. My next conscious recollection was the distant sound of foghorns and the gentle heaving of the floor under my body. My head throbbed with the beat of a giant kettle drum. I tried to move. My arms were pinned against my sides. My vision was foggy. As it cleared, I could see the huge frame of a man hovering over me. He wore a white suit and a large plantation hat. It was Lyle Milford Jackman.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant, Sweet Tango Apples, guilty. On all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator.
Take your seat as Matthew Slade, Private Investigator, unfolds part two of a three-part story, Day of the Phoenix.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator.
In last week's story, Matthew Slade found himself suspected of killing his friend and client, Richard Marlowe, and Marlowe's chauffeur, Howard Morris. Murders which also involved the disappearance of a valuable jade statuette in the form of the mythical Phoenix Bird. With three separate people contacting Slade to recover the Phoenix, Marlowe's young and attractive widow, Laura, a curious man from Damascus, Aram Ballestero, and a questionable art dealer, Edward Da Silva, Slade set out to find the murderer and the reasons behind the interest in the missing Phoenix. While searching Da Silva's home, Slade is blackjacked. He regains consciousness to find a huge man standing over him, a man from Hong Kong, he knows as Lyle Milford Jackman.
Mr. Slade, good of you to come, sir.
I pulled myself up to a sitting position. Dallas Hawk stood behind Jackman. Next to him, a large, sinister-looking Oriental.
Dallas brought your message. I regret not being able to time this visit to coincide with your office hours, but you're a difficult man to reach. Indeed, you are.
Where am I?
Aboard the Kondo Maru, sir. A Japanese freighter.
Well, this is the first time I've been shanghaied for an appointment.
Well put. Now, sir, first let me say it's unfortunate the circumstances of this meeting cannot be as pleasant as our first, when I extended hospitality to you and Richard Marlowe in Hong Kong.
Yes.
I was disturbed to read this morning of Mr. Marlowe's untimely death, particularly since I have been caused the inconvenience of a 6,000-mile sea journey to recover what is rightfully mine.
And?
You fraudulently tricked me into selling you the Jade Phoenix for a pittance when you knew it to be worth a fortune.
I knew nothing of the kind. I estimated its value at $200. That's what was offered. That's what you accepted. A fair transaction.
Come, come, sir. You can hardly expect me to believe that.
To prove it otherwise, the Phoenix to me is still a replica and worth exactly what we paid. No more.
That is a matter of opinion, sir. Replica or not, the Phoenix belongs to me. I want it back.
You might try telling that to whoever stole it.
Stolen? That fact wasn't reported in the papers.
They don't know about it. And for the moment, neither do the police.
Would it come as a surprise to you, sir, if I told you the Phoenix is worth in excess of $500,000? That is a lot of money, sir. Wouldn't you agree?
I certainly would.
Hank Pinto, Shimoda. Ah, the steward with our wives. A little libation, Mr. Slade. I'm sure you could do with it. Untie Mr. Slade, Dallas. That will be all, Stuart. A definitely delicious blend of fine French wine, sir. I trust you'll find it appealing. Here's to our meeting. Shall we go on?
By all means.
If the Phoenix has been stolen, somebody in the city has it. I want it. Now, let's be frank. Do you have any idea who that might be?
An idea, yes.
Excellent. Now, sir, a proposition for you. deliver the phoenix, and one-third of its realized worth will be yours. Now, that would amount to a tidy sum.
Well, what makes you think if I found it, I'd turn it over to you?
I'm a determined man, Mr. Slade. Have ways and means of getting what I want.
You mean using your muscle men over there?
If necessary. But you appear to be a man of sound reasoning. I'm sure we can come to a satisfactory understanding.
You leave little choice.
A man of good sense.
Now, assuming I locate the Phoenix for you, what guarantee would I have against you slipping off to Hong Kong, leaving me out in the cold, so to speak, or perhaps even dead?
You would have my word, sir, as a gentleman.
Well, that's fine for a fraternal club, but I mean something that would act as a bond, a guarantee of your good faith.
Would $500 guarantee you that?
No, but $5,000 might. After all, we are talking about a half million.
A man of definite ideas. I like that. $5,000 it is, sir. I like to be fair, always. Shall we toast to a profitable transaction?
Incidentally, your friend from Damascus is here.
Ballestero?
He arrived yesterday. He said you sent him to London on a wild goose chase.
I did. By Jove, I did. He is a man worth watching. Could cause us trouble. The authorities, if you know what I mean. Where might he be contacted?
And so you can send Dallas around to take care of him?
No, sir. Just to follow him.
Well, he's not very good at that. Leave Ballestero to me.
Very well, sir. He is your charge. For the moment, then, that concludes our discussion. I'll have Dallas drive you home.
Oh, and about the $5,000. You have it at my office tomorrow morning. And let's have it understood. I'm not guaranteeing anything. Whatever has to be done will be done my way.
A check will be at your office in the morning.
No checks. Cash.
In crisp new bills. Shall we drink to it?
I'll send you a receipt. Your guarantee.
As you like. Allow me to see you off the ship. I trust I'll be hearing from you shortly.
I left Jackman in a swirl of cigar smoke. He was an insidious man, one not easily tricked. I knew I'd have to walk a tightrope in my dealings with him. I returned to my apartment, was just finishing a shower, when the phone rang.
Hello?
Fine. I've been trying to reach you all afternoon. Where have you been?
Oh, it's another long story, Jonesy. How's Mrs. Marlowe?
She's at the Fremont Terrace, apartment 401. She's waiting to hear from you.
Good work. You're a sweetheart, sweetheart. Good night.
I dressed, then left for the Fremont Terrace apartment. As I pulled up in front, I saw Mrs. Marlowe leaving in a cab. I followed right to Eddie DeSilva's home. Her phone call there earlier now took on a meaning. I watched her from my car as she approached the front door. DeSilva opened it. She went inside. I made my way to the door. I could hear their muffled voices. Successive slaps, and then... I tried the door. It was locked. I braced myself and put my shoulder to it. It gave way. They were standing in the center of the room. De Silva had hold of her arm. A thin line of blood ran down his cheek. He raised his hand and slammed it against her face. I moved in on him. He showed no resistance.
My, such a lot of brawn and so few brains. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Eddie.
This is a private affair, friend. I don't remember inviting you.
Well, you'll have to forgive the entrance. An invitation seemed unnecessary. Now, what's all this about? Uh-huh. It's like that, is it? No one's talking.
Please don't interfere, Mr. Slade. It doesn't concern you.
Well, unfortunately, I'd say I'm right in the middle of it.
If you aren't, because you put yourself there, and I told you this afternoon, stay out of it, friend.
I know that's what you told me, Eddie, but I wasn't too impressed with your advice. I'm not so sure I understand all this, Mrs. Marlowe. As I remember it, you came to me with a plea for help. And there was that story of being penniless and then those incriminations against your friend. Of course, I didn't altogether believe you, but parts of it did sound interesting. Particularly about the Phoenix. Now, I bet you completely forgot about that.
You don't understand it. It's not easy to explain at this time.
Oh, you're right. Discussing it in front of Eddie is bad form. He might feel inclined to challenge some of the things you'd say.
Let's not discuss it any further.
Oh, let's do. Let's sort out the nonsense and get rid of those embarrassing half-truths.
What? As I told you this morning.
Eddie doesn't go along with that story. And besides, he's got a good one of his own.
I told it to you straight, friend.
Playing games, are we? Well, if that's the way you want it, it's fine by me. You're going to have to do your talking sooner or later. And you won't find it easy putting off of the police. They've given me until tomorrow to come up with a convincing story. What I have so far should interest them.
There's no sense in getting riled, friend. There's really nothing to all this. It's an unfinished
business transaction. With the events of last night, well, we felt it best to finalize it discreetly.
That's all there is to it.
Oh, you two are good. And you're about as discreet as my entrance through that door. One or both of you are lying. Go ahead and lie. I won't stop you. But see how far it gets you.
Mr. Slade? Matt? Please, wait.
For what?
Will you take me home?
Get in. Well?
Your entrance was marvelous. You were like a dashing knight saving his fair maiden.
Why, Mrs. Marlowe.
Did you mind my kissing you? You are a friend of the family.
I guess I am doing all right at that. That is the way you planned it, isn't it?
Oh, you're mistrustful of me.
Now, whatever gave you that idea?
You're also making fun of me.
Well, now we're in a fun mood. Why don't you just start in at the beginning?
No questions. Not now. Later, at my apartment.
She was playing it cute, and I decided to play along with her. Here's your key, Mrs. Marlowe.
Keep it. As my dashing knight, you may have to rescue me again. I wouldn't want you to break down this door. You won't mind if I change before we chat?
No, not at all.
If you're handy in the kitchen, you might heat some coffee. It's on the stove. I'll just be a minute. Can you find everything?
All but the sugar.
Oh, it's in the cupboard above the sink.
Oh, yeah. Correct.
You need help?
Not at the moment.
Turn on some music.
Anything in particular?
No, whatever you'd like.
I noticed some paperback novels lying on the cabinet. The top one caught my eye. The cover displayed an attractive girl clothed in a sheer hostess gown. Her blonde hair fell to her shoulders. The title read, Blackmail.
Something interesting?
Laura stood in the doorway. The girl on the cover had come alive. Remarkable resemblance.
Oh, that's a bed partner.
You don't have much imagination, do you?
Score one for Mr. Slade. Well, you're not going to stand there all night, are you? Come, sit here.
The apartment comfortable?
Very. Do you take this good care of all your clients?
Special clients.
I'm flattered. Now, I find you very attractive. Falling for you is easy. You're something quite new. Different. And you kiss beautifully.
You're flattering me.
Would you believe me if I told you I'm falling in love with you?
No, I wouldn't.
Well, the truth is I am. I don't know how to pay you a greater compliment.
Well, you might stop insulting my intelligence. You aren't in love with me, and you know it.
I could try to convince you.
From the bedroom?
Possibly.
That's a switch. Well, it won't work, Mrs. Marlowe. Making love is fine. I'd like to spend more time at it, but my intuition tells me that going in there with you...
You aren't the most exasperating man I've ever known. You're sarcastic and unfeeling and...
And old enough to know when I'm being played a line. Now, that's all settled now. What were you doing at Eddie DeSilva's?
Oh, Matt, I want you to trust me.
Well, as yet, you've given me little reason to trust you.
I've asked you to help me.
I'm not sure I really know what it is you want.
The Phoenix.
Oh, that's what you told me. But how much of that story this morning is the truth?
I haven't told you everything. I'm afraid.
Of what?
Of what might happen to you.
Someone might try to kill me?
Yes.
Now, you're a gem of a liar. All right, let's take it again. What were you doing
at De Silva's. Matching stories?
No. Oh, that's not important. What is important is that you helped me. You said you'd help me. Don't you see, you're the type of person I need. I've got to have.
I wouldn't know about that.
Oh, you're being unfair, totally unfair.
And you're being dishonest. Now, why don't you try telling me the truth?
Please, Matt. With you, it's different. I've never felt this way about anyone before. I know you're wondering about Eddie, but at the time, I had no choice. I needed his sort to help me.
The sordid life of Laura Marlowe on display. No sale.
That's the way it is?
That's the way it is. Yeah, go ahead. Take a deep breath and shake a little. Now, let's see how helpless you can look.
You think I deserve it, don't you? Oh, you're wrong about me, Matt. If I could only get you to understand.
And stop it. Stop this drivel.
Don't be harsh with me, Matt.
I'll try to remember that tomorrow when I'm talking to the police.
You won't tell them about the Phoenix?
There's no other way. I'm not going to let you involve me in this any further.
Involve you? I don't understand.
You understand perfectly. You need me to run interference between you and De Silva. Somewhere along the line, I pick up the Phoenix and deliver it to you. Oh, I make it killed in the process, but stupid Lancelot Slade will do it all because you say you love him. You're hiding something. If you want me to help you, I've got to know the full story. I'm fed up with being blackjacked, grilled, and threatened with jail, and of you trying to make a fool of me.
Be patient with me, Matt.
I've reached the limit of my patience. Well, this whole thing is ridiculous. And when you're ready to tell me the truth, you call me.
I couldn't help but smile as I walked down the hall to the elevator. I thought my performance was pretty corny, but at least it was better than hers. She'd have to use different tactics from here on out. I wasn't about to fall for that phony lovemaking routine. It was late when I drove into the Warwick Arms garage, parked my car, and rode the elevator up to my floor. I could feel the anesthesia of sleep creeping through my bones as I reached my apartment door. It was ajar. I flattened against the wall. I edged the door open with my foot, and there sat Lyle Jackman, reading a copy of The Brothers Karamazov.
You people have the strangest visiting hours.
Again, my apology, Mr. Slade. Forgive the invasion of your privacy. The visit now is purely social.
Yeah, the place is a mess. His work, no doubt.
The search was a necessity. A matter of precaution, you understand. I had to be sure you weren't already in possession of the Phoenix. It seems you are not. Or at least if you are, it is not in this apartment.
Yeah, well, tell Hawks to stop waving that silly revolver in my face or I have to take it away from him.
No need for that, Dallas. Put it away.
If you don't mind, how did you gentlemen get in here?
I thought you might be wondering about that. Well, sir, in all fairness, I must give credit to Dallas. He has a knack for opening locked doors.
I'll bet. I can't imagine you slipping in through the keyhole.
Very neatly put. Now, sir, let's be candid. The house you were searching on Ronda Vista Lane belongs to Edward De Silva, a dealer in antiques. Would it be foolish of me to think of Mr. De Silva as being our man?
He could be.
I wonder if I would also be correct in thinking, assuming Mr. De Silva is in possession of the Phoenix, that you and he, how shall I put it, are in cahoots.
Your assumption is incorrect.
For your sake, I trust so.
Let's get one thing settled right now. I don't intend to let you threaten me. It's bad enough I should let you get away with breaking in here. Now, if you think
I'm... Now, sir, no need to take that
stand.
Well,
that's the stand it's going to be. I didn't select you people to do business with. You picked me.
Be that as it may...
Look, the police have been badgering me with questions I can't answer. Now, just how long I remain out of their reach till some sense comes out of all this depends on people like you staying out of my way.
The police are not my concern, sir.
Well, they are mine, particularly since I'm the one facing them.
My agreement with you, sir, concerns itself only with locating the Phoenix. I trust we can avoid disagreement over the point. In times of strife, men sometimes lose their better judgment. If it be any consolation to you, let me remind you, in the morning you will have in your possession $5,000. Later, a vastly greater sum.
I'm sure that's worth a reasonable amount of trouble.
I don't mind a reasonable amount of trouble, but I told you I'd handle it my way, and that's the way it's going to be.
You're an uncommonly difficult person to get the best of. But have it as you wish. We leave matters as they stand.
Now, let's do that.
Well, one further thing, Mr. Slade. I'm sure you realize the necessity of our keeping close ties from now until the conclusion of our association. I can't afford any indiscriminate moves, you understand.
But if you're thinking of having Dallas follow me again, I wouldn't suggest it.
I wouldn't like Dallas harmed. I'm extremely fond of him. It'd be hard to find another boy like him.
You could pick one up in any cheap pool room.
I'm sure you'll agree, Mr. Slade, provoking Dallas is not a wise course to follow. He's sometimes quick to take offense. Now I think we must be going.
How do I get in touch with you? Are you still on that boat?
Yes, yes, sir. The Condo Maru, Pier 9.
The next morning, I decided to do a little checking on the man from Damascus. I paid a visit to an old friend, Stephen Gates, curator of Far Eastern art for the city's museum.
Matthew, good to see you again. Come in, come in.
Nice to see you again, Steve.
I heard you were out of the country. Where were you this time?
The Orient, mostly. I was on an assignment for Richard Marlowe.
Ah, yes. Unfortunate about his death. Odd business, that.
Yes. I need your professional opinion on something, Stephen.
By all means.
Are you familiar with a jade statuette carved from the likeness of the Tibetan phoenix?
Yes, somewhat. I was reading about it not too long ago. The figure is a strangely conceived image of how the king of birds should look. It's described as having the neck of a serpent, the bill of a wild fowl, and the grace of a swan. Its forehead is crowned with a crest that resembles a mandarin drake. Fascinating, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Is there a possibility an original actually exists?
Oh, my personal opinion is no. But this reference to it here in this volume... I remember it was towards the middle here. Let me see. Yes. Here it is. You know, it's said to be legendary. However, as you're aware, there have been several cases of so-called mythical objects turning out to be realities. In this case, the phoenix has never been proved one way or another. Oh, I see. It says here a Damascus art dealer thought it to be the real thing. The book states he discovered it in a junk store in Corsica, and he kept it for his private collection. It was stolen following his death. It seems more than one person believed it to be anything other than legendary.
Suppose it turned out to be the original. Could you place a value on it?
Oh, it's hard to say. 100,000? 250,000? It could be priceless. How does one put a value on such an item?
Have you ever heard of Aram Ballestero, curator for the Damascus Museum?
Ballestero? It has a familiar ring. I'm sure he's listed in the Mastai's dictionary. Let me look. Here. Oh, yes. Let me see. L. Ballestero. Yes. Ballestero, Aram, curator, Damascus Museum.
I met him yesterday, but I wasn't too sure.
Yesterday? You could hardly have met him yesterday. The directory lists him as deceased.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.